Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to this, the latest episode of the Roker Report. You're joining us now after a 3-3 draw with Brentford. Not what we wanted, certainly, considering we threw away a 2-goal lead and therefore 2 points as well. But before we get into that, I'm joined by a couple of the lads from Roker Report. I've got Gavin with me and I've got Graham. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Not bad, mate. Not bad.
Good stuff. Everybody's, I suppose, a little bit happier now. Well, I say happier. Gotten time to get over the disappointment of the Brentford game. Gav, what do you make of it all, mate? It was a bad one to throw away, I think.
Yeah, it was. We're all getting a bit sick of talking about how bad things are, really. But this is a different level of disappointment because we had the win in the palm of our hands. Well, you know, half time, 3-1 up. That's as good as it gets. One of them was an own goal. Mm. One of them was a penalty. It's a case of how do you manage the balls that up? And to be honest, I was sat watching this and I thought it was a matter of time before we conceded. And that was at half time when there wasn't a ball being kicked. It was just where I'm at the minute. I don't have any faith in the players, really. And obviously, they don't have faith in themselves. We managed to capitulate in the way that we did. It's difficult. It's like I say, I don't mind drawing games, and drawing games is obviously better than losing games, especially away from home. But when you're 3-1 up, you run out of excuses for the players, really. They need to do a lot better. Grayson needs to do a lot better. You know, I thought the decision to set up like we did made sense for a part of the game where we knew Brentford were going to hold on to the ball a lot. I mean, the stats at the end showed Brentford very good in possession. We knew that before we played them. And obviously the first goal came against the run of play. Really, they were back in our half. Oviedo wins the ball brilliantly, plays it forward through the channel and grabbing shows what a good striker can do and puts the ball away, which we're obviously now seeing the fruits of, because grabbing is a proper centre forward. Whether he's going to score us 20, 30 goals, I very much doubt it. But I do think that he's, with him on the pitch, we're a lot better off than James Vaughan, for instance, and it's good to see him back. Watmore, again, good run for the penalty. He came out of nothing, really. He's turn, and then his little bit of movement, and then, you know, the run into the box, which won us the foul. That's what he brings to the team. Duncan Watmore, he's not technically very gifted, but he makes up for that with graft and determination, I think, and he gives us something that no other player does, which is the ability to win your fouls in dangerous areas because of just, he's such a nightmare to defend, really. And I think grabbing, because he's not a particularly good link-up player, he's more of a, if I play off the shoulder, get in the right areas, I'll score your goals type striker. He'll really benefit from having Watmore alongside him. So, I mean, there were positives to the performance. Those were the two main ones in my eyes. But it's glaring, just the overarching disappointment that I've got. The fact that we weren't able to see that game through and put points on the board.
Mm, yeah.
You know, Lee Cattermole had another poor game. I thought he was poor for the first goal. Some are saying he got fouled, but I just think he dillied around on the ball and lost it eventually, and they scored from it. The goalkeeper was poor, I thought. I think Steele needs to be dropped. We might come into this later, I'm sure, but, you know, it's every week now. He's just not good enough. He's positioning for the free kick, I thought, was very poor. I thought he could have done a lot better with that. The third goal, I think he could have done better with that. Just it seems to be every week. We're pointing out the fact that he could have done better on these goals, and he's not helped by the fact that defence in front of him are so poor. But it's becoming very difficult to defend him. And I'm sure the manager, he's made a bold choice in putting him in the head of Reuter, who, all right, he isn't fantastic, but he's certainly, you know, got to be a better option than Steele at the minute, who is the man we spend quite a lot of money on. When you look at, in relative terms, you look at the budget, you know, what was that? Nearly a third of our budget spent on a goalkeeper who is clearly not good enough.
Mm.
But next week's going to be an even more difficult game because we're back at home and we know these players can't play at Stadium of Light. That's quite clear. I think we're about five games now before it becomes a year since we won at home, which is just preposterous. And, you know, then after that, we've got Bolton, who are below us in the table. And if we haven't won one of those two games, I think the Bolton game's a big one. If we get beat against Bolton, it might be curtains for Grayson. So there's a lot to consider, but that was a different level of disappointment, I feel, that game at the weekend.
Mm, absolutely. What about you, Graham?
I kind of echo what Gav said, really. It was like, we're kind of getting used to the getting beat or just being shit. And then we kind of managed to have another level of shit on Saturday. Like, I don't actually think we played that well. And I think Gav attested to it before. I think even when we were 3-1 up, you take it. And what matters in games is that you score goals and win them. But like, one was like a total calamity. Like, the goal was like dropped into his own net. The other was a penalty, which I suppose Watmore won it, fair enough. And the other one was just like a long ball down the field, which Graben finished. But it was effectively like, we finished our shots on target, a goalkeeper's fumble, and a pen. I don't think we played that well, if I'm honest with you. Maybe I'm being really like negative here by saying that, but I just knew at half time we'd find another way to fuck it up. Like, because the players, and I think I tweeted about this on Saturday, they're weak. They've got absolutely no backbone at all. Like, not one of them, in my opinion, not one of them. And maybe that's harsh on people like Graben and Watmore, but I'm sick of like talking about individuals. This team as a whole are just weak. Like, manager's weak. I'm sick of people saying, you know, we've got to understand, you know, where we are and be realistic and not be deluded. Like, I'm not being deluded by thinking we shouldn't be second bottom of this division. It's not a good division. It's shit. It's full of absolute shit teams. And yes, we're one of them, but we're better than some teams. And I think, you know, Grayson in every bloody game, if we like score a goal or we go one up, which is very, very rare, he just sits back. And this guy's meant to be like defensively sound, so you think, well, fair enough, I don't mind having a solid defensive foundation if we can do stuff up top, but if Graben's not there, I don't see us scoring goals. And fair enough, he's back, but like at the same time, I'm saying I don't see us scoring goals if Graben's not there. But we didn't really score that many when he was before he got injured. I'm just trying to cling on to some hope. And I think I did have that level of hope that, you know, when Watmore came back and when we signed McManaman, and that I thought when Johnny Williams gets fully fit, we might have a decent team. But like, they're back and we're still like fucking shit up. Like, the defense is just not good enough. And I think there's a lot more problems than Grayson, but I think the unit as a whole, Grayson is coaching staff, the team as a collective and as individuals, are just weak-minded, weak-willed, and they're just not good enough to be a club of our size. And when I say our size, I don't mean top 10 Premiership. No, not at all. I don't think we're a Premiership club. I don't think in the background we're set up well enough, but we're certainly not a relegation fodder being cut adrift at the bottom of the Championship. I think we're better than that, and maybe I am deluded, but I do think we're better. And I think, you know, we're sleepwalking towards another relegation because just everyone in the club who can change things are weak. Weak as fuck.
Weak. That's the consensus from Graham. Weak. Everybody's weak. Weak. I agree. I can see your point, Lark. I mean, when it comes to the game specifically, I was extremely disappointed. I agree with both of you. I think we all were as fans, really. The biggest problem for me is that the idea of a halftime team talk seems to be ignored these days by pundits. I think if you speak to any manager, they'll tell you how important, how crucial it is that you get the halftime team, not just after any team talk, how crucial it is that you get it right, and just how much of an effect it can have on the people in front of you, i.e. the players. So it really bothers me when fans turn around and say otherwise, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people say like they disagree with the team talk being an issue. But for me, it absolutely is. You're 3-1 up at half time. I mean, don't get me wrong, don't change things. I'm not telling you that there's some master plan there, but you've got to be able to keep some consistency in your squad at that point. You've got to be able to sit down everyone and say, right, look, we're lucky to be here. We're very lucky that we're 3-1 up. And we were, as we've both said already, we're very lucky to be here. We have to maintain this position. Now, what's really interesting for me about that game is that I've been slating Grayson's substitutions pretty much since he arrived, since we first got the opportunity to see it, because the timing of it and the selection was really concerning to me. I mean, he kept throwing on right backs, he kept bringing on John O'Shea, you know, things like that. The only time that it would have been, for me, acceptable to bring on defensive-minded players is when you're leading 3-1 at half-time. That's the only time. So the one chance that he had to do what he always does and bring on defenders, the one time when it would have been useful, the one time when we needed to maintain what we had, he didn't do it. Now, I mean, that's entirely up to him. You can say what you like about the team. You can say what you like about the state we're in, about the owner and whatever, but that's down to the manager. That's down to the manager 100%. he should have recognised. I mean, even with Duncan Watmore, I think he brought him off at like 65 minutes, 70 minutes. He was knackered by that point. Watmore arguably shouldn't have even started the second half. But he did, fair enough. That sort of decision-making, he doesn't seem to understand the timing of it. When the rest of us look at the team and go, his legs are gone, we're being attacked down this flank, you know, we're not defending very well, we need more strength at the back. He doesn't seem to see that. He's just maintaining. I don't know what his game plan is. I mean, it would be pure speculation for me to say anything. But that's what really concerns me about him. I think that's so crucial in a manager. That's why you get given substitutions. It's such an important part of the game. You need to be able to utilise those substitutions properly. That's something that he doesn't seem to be able to do. Something that really concerns me.
You know, when it comes to Grayson, I don't think the bloke. For me, I know what you mean about bringing on defensive minded players to protect the lead and stuff like that. But I just like you talking about like half times, and I think I knew that he would be like just sit back. Like he just doesn't instill confidence. Like, and even if he like for me, I want a manager that's going to say, right, bugger this, let's go and get the fourth, let's finish it. You 3-1 up, probably don't deserve to be, nonetheless, you know, let's go and get the fourth, let's finish this game, get the monkey off our back, and then we can go into next week and try and win the game. But you know, when he speaks in even his press conferences, he just doesn't fill me with confidence. I don't know if it's like his lack of lips, or it's just the fact that I just have absolutely zero confidence in what he says, because he just talks utter shit. Like, he just talks utter crap. He's like Martin Bain's mouthpiece, isn't he? Just like, oh, the club's got a good foundation, or good people, working class. And it's just like, it's the same shit every week. Like, I want to see someone like beat their chest. Like, I'm talking to Kevin Ball last week before the QPR game it was, and he was on about like the Derby game. We got chatting about that, and he says, you know, when you play for Sunderland, you kind of stick your chest out and say, you know, we're Sunderland. Do you get that from Simon Grayson? Because I get the kind of feeling that he's more like we're fucked as opposed to we're Sunderland. I just don't get any confidence from him. So how can you expect him to have a positive halftime team talk? I just think you'll be like, all right, lad, sit back, try not to concede early. Like I can do that. I'll take your wages. I can do that. It's easy. Like, and you cannot like polish a turd, and he's trying to do it. Like, came out and said, oh, we played some good football at times. We didn't, not really. And then he said, oh, you know, we're disappointed, but you know, you would have took a point before the game. No, I wouldn't have. Like, it's Brentford. Yeah. Like, all due respect, it's Brentford. Like, I wouldn't take a point before the game because we're second bottom in a shit league. We need to start winning games. So no, bollocks, I wouldn't take a point.
Yeah, you make some good points there. The one about Grayson, the way that he approaches his talk after the game, and the way that he seems to see what's going on, is the most troubling thing about him from my perspective, because I don't know what he says behind closed doors, but I don't think he believes the stuff that leaves his mouth sometimes. And I don't like the pan Grayson. I know it sounds daft, and people listening to this probably think we do that. We're lining up waiting for this guy to get sacked. It's not that. I do want to see him do well. I wrote about this on the site last week. I would love nothing more than us to win at the weekend, just gone, and then, you know, build from there with this man, because I do think he's a nice enough man, a nice bloke. I do think he's trying his best, but it's just not good enough, clearly. Mm. And, you know, I've seen a lot of chatter on social media about, okay, let's replace Grayson. So who with? I hate that question, really, because one, I'm not the person in charge of recruitment for the club. And if I was, I think what I would do is I'd go out and I'd find out about managers from other countries who might not be names, but do have the capabilities to come in with a group like this, play a better brand of football, then that might eventually go on to achieve results, you know. And it's been shown in the last couple of years, clubs like Hull brought in Marco Silva. Nobody had heard of him. If someone had told you a year ago or whatever, you know, or Sunderland, we're going to replace David Moyes with this guy, Marco Silva, who managed like a mid-table Portuguese team, you'd be thinking, meh, who? But the fact of the matter was, it was actually pretty well thought out. The guy's a good coach. Hull were very unlucky not to stay up. And you're seeing what he's doing at Watford. Okay, they got beat at the weekend, but there's a manager who came out of nowhere who's actually very skilled and good at his job. This is what I think, is that I don't think those making those decisions want a manager like that. They don't want to be ambitious. They don't want to take risks. They want a safe option. Grayson is a safe option. I think Derek McInnes was a safe option because they obviously wanted him on the back of recommendation from Walter Smith, who knew him very well. It's like you look at the scope and the way they're looking at these managers, or certainly since Bain's been around, they know exactly what they're getting when they get these managers through the door. Grayson, when you think about the way he talks and the way that he clearly feels in his role, you look at just the mistakes they made with Moyes, they're kind of being careful not to repeat those with him, and he's very much happy to be here. That's the problem. He's going out there every week talking to the media about positives that aren't there, really. I mean, we're going to see this week, more than likely, talking about how we scored goals, how we're three unbeaten, how we got a point, how he's returning striker, got two goals, which, yeah, great. But you can't hide from the fact that we're second bottom of the division. We haven't won a game in ages. And it's time for some real talk, really. I'm not talking about the sort of stuff that David Moyes came out with, where he was talking about being in a relegation battle. By no means, I don't want to be hearing that. I'm not telling them to lie to us, but what I'm saying is, be a little bit more realistic. Stop telling us that everything's fine, because we know it isn't. We know that it isn't. Mm-hmm. You've got to be more honest with yourself. You've got to sit back and you've got to talk about what you're going to do to put this right. Not the fact that it's platitudes, really. Say, oh, we're going to work hard and train and hope to put the result right. Well, yeah, of course you are, but be a little bit more honest about what's going on. Because once you're a little bit more honest, the brutal nature of what your words are saying, it's going to bring it down to earth. The players need to be brought back down to earth. Yeah, there's players here who don't want to be here, but at the minute, they've got to be here. They've got to fight for every minute that they're on the pitch for Sunderland, and we're not seeing it. That's the issue. Defensively, very poor. And I'm just worried that this defensive coach isn't able to get a clean sheet out of these players who, when you look across the board, you're on about Brian Oviedo, who I think is a really good player at this level, playing left back. A bunch of centre-halves there. Most of them have played at the top level of English football. In O'Shea, Wilson, Coney, all right, hasn't been very good for a while. But, I mean, was it being touted for over 20 million not that long ago? And we're not getting enough out of them, is the problem. So, to round off, Grayson either has to step up, start showing that he really does mean that he wants to be here, or by the Bolton game, he couldn't have a job. And I'm just surprised that so many people are still behind him, because it's becoming more and more difficult with every result just to see where he's going with this.
Well, I mean, I completely agree with you there. One of the things that bothers me is we get at Rugby Report, we say we have a lot of things like this, a lot of opinion comes out. Obviously, it's all entirely dependent on the individual who writes it. There is no overall Rugby Report agenda. But a lot of it, obviously, being, since we all sort of, we have a general consensus, a lot of it is, oh, well, Grayson's not the man for the job anymore. The response we get from some people is, what would you do? Do you know what I mean? And that question really bothers me. That question really bugs the hell out of me, because we as fans, we lack the burden of duty that comes with being a football club owner. That isn't our responsibility, isn't our job. We didn't have the gall or the money to turn around and say, I can lead this football team forward, you know? So that's something that annoys me, because we would never be in that position. If we were in that position, yeah, different story maybe. If I was in that position, I'd have a group of trusted people next to me that weren't spin doctors and liars that could assist me. Do you know what I mean? I'd ask football people. That's what you do, isn't it? You go into a scenario where, let's just imagine theoretically for a moment that you are a billionaire and you do now buy Sunderland. Not that you need to be a billionaire, by the way, but let's imagine for a second that you do. You don't know much about football. What do? Do you hire accountants and lawyers, solicitors, things like that to help you? No, you don't, do you? You hire football people, footballing men and women, people who understand the game in and out. And that's something that bothers me about being asked what I would do, as if that's some sort of pertinent rebuttal to the argument that Grayson shouldn't be here. Oh, what would you do then? Well, no, it's not a pertinent question, is it? But when it comes down to it, if you really want that question answered, the nitty gritty of it is, I mean, Gav's saying there, we could go out and scour the world for a quality manager. Could do that. Yeah, you could do. And that would be perfectly legitimate. I mean, that would be a great alternative to what's happening right now, certainly for all of us. But realistically, a club the size of Sunderland, when you want a role filled, you just put out the word, don't you? You just put out a job advertisement, essentially. Not quite in the Friday ads or anything like that, looking for a manager, but that's what happens. And so you get hundreds of applicants. And there's no doubt in my mind that Sunderland have a lot of applicants when they put out the role for the manager's job. That doesn't surprise me. It's not like, I mean, Richard Branson doesn't scour the world looking for air stewards. Do you know what I mean? They all apply in droves and they get picked by someone that he trusts. Now, this is a very simple and effective corporate strategy. So for as long as Sunderland want to act like a corporation instead of a family football club, which isn't what we want, but it's what they've been maintaining and where they're going with it. So long as they want to act like that, they should act like it. As in, there should be a clear corporate structure. There should be a clear recruitment process. There should be everything put in place for what that manager needs to succeed to do that role. And that's something that really annoys me about Sunderland. I mean, talking about Grayson in general, though, with regards to whether or not he should stay or go, the thing is, we don't even know why Grayson was hired. You know, was he hired because he has experience building squads on a shoestring? Was he hired because he's desperate for the chance? Or was he hired because he's a scapegoat, because he's a yes man? That's something that concerns me. Because it seems to me, the better the manager, the less shit they take. So when I see someone like Simon Grayson, who seems to take all of the shit, that concerns me. I mean, something Graham said earlier about not having spine. I mean, I couldn't really attack him personally like that, Grayson. But certainly as an employee, of Sunderland Football Club, he just gets bent over a barrel, you know? He claimed we'd have a mid-level championship budget, and I'm sorry to keep going on about this, but it drives me mad. Mid-level championship budget spends $2 million. What's happening there? There's a big question mark over that whole window, that whole period where Grayson was maintaining that he was going to be given the support he needed, where we were being told that Ellis Short was going to financially and personally support the club, and neither of those things have come to pass. That's something that the media, the local media in particular, conveniently ignores when they're reporting on Sunderland. So they ignore a lot of things when they're reporting on Sunderland. But that's one of them that really bothers me, because the fact is, Grayson wasn't necessarily hired because he's the best man for the job. And that's my overall point here. He was hired because, I don't know, he suited whatever agenda they had at the time. You know, whether it was someone who would take $2 million and pretend that he'd been given 20, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, Grayson wasn't given the job because it would take Sunderland up. He wasn't given the job because it would take Sunderland forward. He was given the job because perhaps managers like Derek McInnes, they wouldn't take that. You know what I mean? They wouldn't accept that bad hand. They would say, no, thank you. I know a good thing when I see it. I know a bad thing when I see it. And Sunderland right now are a bad thing. So yeah, for me, there's a couple of things I covered there, I suppose. I don't really want to rant too much about it. It just really annoys me, the state we're in right now. Moving on though, we do have some questions as per usual. Got some questions from you guys on Twitter. Here's a good one. Ken Chappell, this is actually going on the Chappelle. This is going on what I was saying earlier. This is about who could take over. So let's speak realistically for a moment. Who could we get in? We can't speak about any managers specifically, because as I say, we'd need to go out and scour the country for them, scour the world for them. But it's clear that we need someone with backbone. It's clear that we need someone who won't tolerate anything less than absolute commitment from his players. You know, that's something that needs to happen. You can't just have players turning up every day and paying them and assuming that that's their job done, because it isn't.
I was talking about this yesterday with some friends, and I was trying to work out what it is I would look for in a manager, particularly as obviously you weren't at a short to go nowhere anytime soon. And you've got to consider the limitations that pretty much every manager in the last 3 or 4 years had placed on them. Nothing's going to change in that respect. So even if we replace Grayson, we could be sat talking about the same problems, essentially, that the players aren't committed enough, that, you know, we're not spending enough money in the transfer window, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the bare minimum that I would expect of any manager is that they're able to get these players to play in a fashion which one suits them, which two sets us up in a more positive manner, because for a long time now we've played a lot of very dull football. And I do think that when you look at the quality of our attacking players, certainly we should be playing better stuff than just kick and rush back to front football, which is what we play under Grayson. You know, thirdly, I think that whoever replaces Simon Grayson, should he go, which, to be honest, I do think is around the corner, provided we, you know, don't get a couple of decent results coming up. I think whoever replaces him has to understand that we need more than just words. He came in and he told us that this is a passionate area of the North East. We all bought into it. I was like, oh, it sounds excellent, this. But that wears thin when you're losing games. Somebody who truly understands what it is like to be involved at this club is preferable, which is why so many people, if it happens, will point to the likes of Kevin Phillips, someone who was linked with the role before Grayson got it. People will, you know, the usual stuff, oh, bring Bawley back, bring Reedy back. But to be honest, somebody like that involved back in the club is what we need. I'm not talking about giving Kevin Ball the manager's job or giving Peter Reid the manager's job, but having them around the place, somebody who knows what it's like to be a success at this level in the Championship, conveying that message constantly is important, not just for the players and for the rest of the club, but for the fans, because since Allardyce left, it feels that there's nobody within the structure of the club that we can look up to. Essentially, we haven't got anybody there who we believe in. Like, I believe in Kevin Ball. I believe that he loves Sunderland. So if he was involved and we were seeing poor attitudes on the pitch, I would like to think that behind the scenes he was kicking their arses, which I think is what's missing at the minute. All right, we've got Robbie Stockdale there. He's been around a few managers now, and that's kind of the problem. There's no real change behind the scenes. Every time we're replacing these managers, it's like a new face, but with the same coaching staff behind them. And yeah, if Grayson goes, I think it's got to be somebody who not only Shuad knows what they're doing, I just think they've got to know what this club's about. It's more than just saying that you know what this club's about. We know that the people out there without jobs, or there's even people like Kevin Ball at the club who behind the scenes could be used a lot better than they are currently. So that's my two pence on it anyways. I just think it would have to be a very measured replacement. And as long as Ellis Shorty, we're not going to be spending big bucks on good managers. So it would maybe have to be something a little more well thought out. I just fear that the reason Kevin Ball's nowhere near the coaching side of things anymore is because he knows exactly what's going on and he knows exactly what would put it right, essentially. And they don't want somebody like that rocking the boat. They want a yes man. And that's the issue, really. We're stuck in this rut until Short leaves. So it would have to be, would be wishful thinking, really, somebody like coming back.
I completely agree with you. And that's the problem, isn't it? We are stuck in limbo. There's no way forward. There's no path for us because we've still got the same owner. We've still got the same CEO, and they've still got the same agenda, whatever that is. And that's something that they keep to themselves. Because I'll tell you what, I'll tell you right now, it's not promotion. That's not on the menu. That's not happening. And just in case you were thinking it was, it's not. I don't know what happened. I don't know. We speculated a lot before this all began. We speculated a lot at the start of the season, the end of last season, whether this was going to be the sort of season where we consolidate whatever we have, consolidate our position in the championship, try and push up. Nah, just awful. As it is now, we're in free fall. And small things like not being able to hold on to a 3-1 lead with only 45 minutes to go. What's really tragic about that, actually, just to go off topic slightly, is in the Premier League, that's the sort of time frame that we'd have been dealing with regularly. We were dealing with regularly, do you know what I mean? Holding on, not just holding on for 45 minutes, holding on for like 70 minutes, 75 minutes, 80 minutes, getting an early goal and holding on and holding on and holding. We've seen some proper desperate, even heroic defending at the Stadium of Light, and just from players in the jersey. And you don't see that anymore. Do you know what I mean? You see desperation. Don't see heroism. I don't see any grittiness or anything like that. I don't see any real fight. Like that game against Brentford, I was sat there watching it. I was thinking, you know what? This is actually arguably one of the best Sunderland games I've watched, certainly this season. I mean, yeah, slim pickings and all that, but there seemed to be some energy. You know, I don't know whether it was just, I mean, to be fair, it was two crapped sides, you know what I mean, picking away at each other, but there was still a lot there to be positive about. And there is, even though we lost those 2 points, there are still some positives to take. As we've mentioned before, Duncan Watmore's a fantastic little player. He's so crucial to us right now. Graben is arguably the most worthwhile of the transfers that we brought in, because even though McGeady's obviously a talent, Graben's still got a couple of years on him, and he's looking like he could become quite prolific if he can stay fit. He's certainly no Jermaine Defoe, but he is predatory, and that's something that we really needed to replace in Jermaine Defoe. That's something that we were certainly missing. Yes, we need more than that. We need some actual target men. We need some actual proper strikers. But in lieu of those, Graben, I think, does well. Yeah, positives from that. As I say, there are quite a few. The negatives outweigh them, I would say, when you're looking at things like Lee Catamol's performance and things like that. But when you turn to the performance of the front three in general, or when I say front three, just the attacking forwards, everyone up front, you're looking really impressive to me.
When I'm watching Sunderland attack, I see a lot of promise there. And the problem that I have with the team generally is just the defensive side of things. I have absolutely no issues with our attack. Obviously, James Vaughan aside, I think Vaughan's a poor player, but provided you keep Graben fit, you get McGeady and you get Watmore around him. And then, you know, Williams could be a big player provided he stays fit, although we've seen so far why he's been here, why he struggled at Palace so much to stay in the team was because of injury issues. We're saying that now. Really, he's nowhere near the team again this weekend, just gone. But if you can get players like that fit, that's and I said it when we brought them in, that's a top championship attack line. Like Matt Manaman's not getting in the team at the minute, and I think he's a good player. We've got good players in those areas, but behind them is a very poor, shaky defence. So I said this weeks and weeks ago, because it's been so long since we last won a game, I said we've got to learn to start again from the back. And just that point Sam Allardyce used to make about keeping a clean sheet, keeping that first clean sheet, that we need to do that. We need to just tell the defenders, look, you fight for your lives on the pitch, make sure we keep that clean sheet this week. And I've no doubt they're talking about it, and I've no doubt that they're riddled with self-doubt. But once that first clean sheet's kept and the confidence begins to restore, you're going to see a lot better Sunderland, because the attack's so good. If the defence behind them could play a bit, keep those clean sheets, I've got no doubt that we would score goals, because we have goal scorers all across that front four. it's just a case of how do we solve the big glaring issue, which is the defence. I mean, with players out injured like Wilson, it's hard to really make changes. I think we was pretty much forced to bring Coney in unless he gave a kid a chance. But as we've learned, that's just not going to happen. This next game against Bristol City, they're a good team. They're a very good side. They're not you know, near the top of the division without reason. But what we've got to do is we've got to let them come here and we don't let them play through us. We throw our bodies on the line. We see some, like you say, heroic defending. And then get that first clean sheet out of the way. Even if it's a 0-0 draw, I couldn't care less. That clean sheet's going to be huge because it sets them up to improve from there. We've already seen that the attack's good enough, but it's about time some of these players, you know, stood up to be counted, because majority of them have played Premier League football throughout their careers for a reason. Standard Premier League defenders. But when you're dropping the Championship, you should be expecting better than this. And I guess this weekend, if it is a 0-0 draw, we've got to be happy with it. This game coming up, and we might get onto it later, but we've got to be happy that the team has managed to keep a clean sheet finally, because it's just been so long. It's been so long. And it would just be nice to come away and say, you know what, we defended really well today. The keeper was reliable. The centre-halves didn't put a foot wrong. But the only time I've been able to say that recently is when we've actually conceded goals. Like Preston, oh, Shea played really well. Well, we conceded two goals, which is the big problem at the minute. So yeah, there's got to be a bigger focus placed on the defensive side of things, because I have no doubt that with players like McGeady on the pitch, we're capable up the top end.
How do you motivate those defenders though? Like, Coney doesn't want to be here. How do you really realistically motivate O'Shea? Browning, he's going to make mistakes, but you can see that when he plays, he does try. I honestly don't think Grayson can do that. I think, you know, we revert back to what you said earlier about having someone in the club, and we talked about Kevin Ball, Kevin Phillips and stuff like that. And I don't think, and there'll be a lot of people listening and they'll say, you know, if you bring in someone like that, it doesn't magically fix. And no, I don't think that. But I think what I want to go back to, if you remember the time when we got relegated with 15 points, and I think, you know, that season probably would have followed on the same way as this one has if things hadn't changed so early on. And I think it wasn't so much, I mean, we remember what having Niall Quinn as manager was like. He was awful, absolutely rotten, but he understood what he had to bring in, what kind of mentality he had to bring in, because he knew the club and he knew somebody of the ilk of Roy Keane could basically get players standing up an extra inch. And I think having someone more involved like Kevin Ball, Kevin Phillips, or even Stefan Schwartz, who we were talking about before, somebody who could bring in, you know, an understanding of the football club, an understanding of what makes it tick, would get the right appointment. And I think you need to have an appointment of someone that makes people like Lamine Kone and John O'Shea go, actually want to play for this guy. I mean, I remember watching absolute losers play for us, like before Roy Keane came in, and then we played that West Brom game, and he seen players who were obviously not of the right ability, but they wanted to play for Roy Keane because he was Roy Keane. And I'm not saying we can go and get a Roy Keane now, no one off the top of my head I can think of, but you know, thankfully that's not my job. But if you had someone like Kevin Ball, Kevin Phillips, Stefan Schwartz, someone who could come into the club, have an understanding of what the manager requires to get players that are underperforming stand up an extra inch and understand what this football club means. I think that's what we need. At the moment, we've got people like Martin Bain telling us that he understands the area. Bollocks. He doesn't get it at all. It's, you know, I think it was Craig who wrote an article about, it's not just about us being a hard working area, it's about honesty as well. Like, a lot of the area and the football club and everything about Sunderland is honesty and not mincing your words. And he does. Like Martin Bain, Simon Grayson, they all say the right things, but it's not always what you say, it's how you say it. And we need somebody to come into the club and say, you know what, we need an appointment like XYZ, the way Niall Quinn did, to have a real understanding of their club, to get everyone, you know, push their chest out a little bit and remember who we actually are. And I don't think Grayson's got that, and I don't think that's always necessarily his fault, but the people in the club at the moment who would choose the next manager, the reason I wouldn't sack Grayson at the moment, and you can hear in my voice, I don't think he's the right man, but the reason I wouldn't sack him is because the man that would appoint the next person would get another Simon Grayson, and that's not what we need. We need somebody in the club who's got an understanding of the values, the meaning, and what we need, to appoint someone who can change the mentality of that losing football club and weak mentality we have at the minute. And it's as simple as that.
But that's the trouble, isn't it? As we discussed earlier, we're in that limbo, and that's not going to happen, is it? That's the biggest issue here. I completely agree with you. You're absolutely right. But it isn't going to happen. For as long as Ellis Shaw is there, we're going to remain in this rut. When people turn around and say it isn't Ellis Short's fault, it might not be Ellis Short's fault. Think what you want on that. But The fact is, Ellis Short hired Martin Bain, and Martin Bain has a job to do. He's doing it very well, but that job does not involve any progression for Sunderland Football Club as a football club. You know, it's clear to all of us, unless you're talking about, oh, it's a 5-year plan. How can it be if Ellis Short's put the club up for sale? This is what bothers me. On the one hand, commitment from Ellis Short. We've got a plan in place. On the other hand, club's for sale. Can't afford it. What is going on? Are we literally, people are supposed to sit there, pay for their season tickets, you know, on the grounds that they're being told by the CEO that the owner is going to commit to this club, and that he isn't. Then it turns around and it's up for sale for nothing. This is after he's turned down, supposedly, two investors at a time when he could have changed something for the football club. That's the thing that really bothers me about this. But it does anyway, it does, doesn't it? So I'm not going to sit and keep going on about Ellis Short, because it'll end up like some Catcher in the Rye thing, and I'll end up trying to assassinate them. It's driving me mad.
I just feel like, I think you've got a real good point about the limbo thing, and I don't want to touch on it too much and bang on about them again, because we're all pissed off at him, aren't we, pretty much? But like, when it comes to, you know, his plan that he has, one plan that I do trust that he has is that he wants to sell this like shitstorm that he's got at the minute. And I think when it comes to selling it, surely he wants us to be in a relatively healthy position, at least mid-table championship, so he can showcase this to potential buyers and say, look at the size of this club. Get the appointment right, get a couple of good players in, and you'll get these back in the Premiership, and the potential is huge. I cannot understand why he just kind of like just let Martin Bain set fire to the house and burn it all down just so he can sell it. Like, if he wanted, like, what was it, 90 million? I've got to be honest, I love Sunderland, and I wouldn't, if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't invest at the minute.
You would think that he would want a stable asset to sell. But in fact, in truth, I mean, again, speculation, looking back at what he does, he sells distressed assets. That's how he made most of his money. The truth is that all of this cost cutting and things like that, that is part of making the club sellable. Clearly, that's part of advertising the club, even if it is selling Jordan Pickford, who, by the way, looks like he'll be joining us in the Championship at this rate. Oh, where I say join us in the Championship, we'll be in League One, but regardless, selling Jordan Pickford, selling all those players, spending no money, clearing debt, and then selling the club cheap as, that's his version of advertising the club. You know, I imagine that if he wanted to, I'm sure he wanted to have us at the top of the Premier League and sell us for big money then. But I think he realised a long time ago that he was going to have to cut his losses with Sunderland, and that's what he's done. And that's what really concerns me. That goes back to what I just said. He clearly gave up his commitment to the club a long time ago. And we've been told, because the facts are there, they're in front of you, in black and white, on paper, you've been told by the CEO of Sunderland Football Club that the owner was committed financially and personally. You've been told that, but then he didn't commit financially or personally. He hasn't committed to the club financially or personally. So that was a lie. That was a lie. And there's nothing libellous about me saying that. It was a lie. It's a lie to thousands of people who pay for their season tickets. That's what it is. It was a bloody lie then. It's a lie now. And I don't know why people are treading on eggshells around the guy. I don't know why people are bending over backwards to avoid confrontation with Sunderland Football Club. Do you know what I mean? Ellis Short is a nobody. Martin Bain is a nobody. They're a pathetic bunch of amateurs who have ruined a family football club. They've butchered it. We've got another question right on Twitter saying, where do you think you'll end up at the end of the season? I know where we'll end up. We'll end up in League One. Of course we will. And it's obvious. And that was telegraphed 2 years ago. Simple as. It was always going to end up like this. It was always going to go this bad. It was always going to be this bad because the owner and the CEO don't give a fuck about the club. They don't care about you and me. They don't care about the fan enjoyment. They don't care about fan engagement. Any engagement they do make is just so that they can say they did it. Do you know what I mean? If it wasn't for the fact that this these EFL rulings state that the club has to, or any football club in the league has to meet with fans, I think it's up to 4 times a year now. If it wasn't for that ruling, does anyone think this red and white army thing would be going? Because it wouldn't. It wouldn't. Bain would laugh at it. He'd laugh at it. Just like he laughs at every effort that the fans would make to engage or have the gall to change anything about the club. The whole thing's corrupt, mate. These people are fucking arseholes. They've been arseholes for a long time. And they're going to continue to be arseholes till long after they're gone. Do you know what I mean? But when that'll be, as to when they'll actually be gone, could be 2 years, could be 10. You know what I mean? Could be 2 days. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Ellis Short and Martin Bain have said to you. It doesn't matter if they said they're going to do this, this, and this, because they aren't. They're going to do what Ellis Short and Martin Bain want to do. And everything else, just so much lip service, man. I'm just sick of hearing it. But anyway, moving on to more positive things. We've got Bristol City coming up next. I mean, Bristol City are an interesting one. All rants over now. Bristol City are an interesting one. They had a fantastic run of form up until they were smashed. 3-0 against Leeds recently. I don't know if you can take that as any kind of, I don't know, any kind of positive or anything like that. I mean, it's a bit of a, for me, it concerns me that a team that were doing incredibly well and have a lot of firepower, have a really good organisation and a good manager. Concerns me that they're doing really well until they came up against Leeds. Leeds, a team who are also in some sort of weird rebuild and have been going on like this for the last couple of years. But they're looking very positive. And obviously, I was there when we got thrashed by Leeds at Stadium of Light recently. I was expecting more from that because I thought that the team were, as I say, in transition. And I thought we could pick up some points off them. But no, apparently not. Again, yeah, Bristol City are an interesting one. As Gav says, Simon Grayson doesn't have long. At all, doesn't have very long at all to turn this around. I think Bristol City is going to be a fine example of that. If we go there and we can't even get a point, well, that's going to look really bad for him. What do you guys make of it, Gav? What about you, Bristol?
Yeah, they're a good side. They'd only lost one game up until this past weekend, and what they've got, what we don't, is that strength within to just draw games out. So they've drawn 6 of the 12 of the 13 games, which just shows, you know, they're pretty solid, which worries us slightly. But again, when I'm talking about 0-0 draws and stuff like that, it's probably more likely to come this weekend than it is against Bolton. But yeah, Bristol, decent team. They've got a good young manager who's got a lot of ambition. They'll be keen to put that result at the weekend behind them because, as we saw, like you mentioned, Leeds are, I would say, probably the best team we face this season. I know when you look at the top, Cardiff are in second, Sheffield United are third, two teams we've lost to at home this season as well. But when it comes to who was the best footballing side we face, Leeds were definitely that team. So, you know, it's hard to bear, but they've just got to put that behind them. They've got a bit of a good side. And coming to the Stadium of Light, you know, if they need it to be refocused, then this game will certainly refocus them because they're facing a side who struggle at home, for one. They're facing a side who can't stop leaking goals. And they're facing a team who they know if they're very patient in early doors, pick their moments, that the atmosphere around the place will do the work for them. But I am still pretty confident that we might get something. I would be happy with a 0-0 draw, like I said before. I'm desperate for that next win. Of course I am. But I just think that we need to make some steady progress somewhere, and starting with a draw would be nice, or a 0-0 draw. If it was a 1-0 win, that would be infinitely better. But what I'm saying is if we come away and we've only managed a goalless draw, then I won't be too disheartened by it. They did have a player sent off at the weekend. The centre forward got sent off. He got straight red, which means obviously they've got to shake it up a little bit. I know he's not, the guy's called Matty Taylor, I think they got him from the conference. Not a particularly prolific player, but you know, it's not great news when your striker gets sent off. But we've got to go into this game backs to the wall, knowing that a win is essential, knowing that as difficult as this Stadium Light is apparently to play at the minute, that it can be just as easy to play there, provided they go out and get an early goal. We go out and get an early goal, and we don't sit back. We actually put our foot on the ball, utilise the players we've got. We've got some good footballers up there that we can pick a team off, but we've got to start putting results behind us. We can't, I mean, we've sat and talked about the Brentford game at length today, but I mean, dwelling on the nature of that performance is going to do none of us any good. I'm pretty tired of just being negative and sick of everything. I'm dying for this team to get a win. I'm dying to have something good to talk about. Like, we come on the show every week and we're talking about how bad we are, and we don't want to be talking about how bad we are, but there's nothing good to talk about. It would be great if we sat here this time next week talking about how we've just beat a good side in Bristol City. So let's just see what happens. I think Grayson's on borrowed time, but I don't want to focus too much on that. I just want to focus on the fact that this side really needs a win. If we get it at the weekend, I mean, what better way to carry on that form than against a team below you in the league, against Bolton on the Tuesday night? So I'm not big into all this keep the faith stuff and that, but at the minute that's all we've got, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the truth of it. See, that is the ultimate crux of it all, is that regardless of how angry we are or how shit results are and things like that, we do keep the faith. I think that's half of the insult of being told to keep the faith, is that we already have it, you know, and you're being told to keep it by people who don't understand what it is. So that's something that's always bothered us about. But yeah, Gav's absolutely right there, what he says. It's not easy being a Sunderland fan, is it? And it's not easy talking about it every week. No optimism, nothing but negativity. But that's just the way things are. Graham, do you have anything left to say on the matter, buddy?
The Bristol City game. I mean, to quote the great Darren Gibson, we're shit and I don't want to be shit. That keeps me kind of going. I think, touching on what Gav said, I think, you know, if Grayson's got anything about him, we've got to hope he has. And I do want to see him do well. Of course I do, because it means we're doing well. But I think he's got to look at this game against Bristol City and, you know, forget the fact that they're a decent side. It's Bristol City. Like, respectfully, like, we should be looking to win a game against Bristol City. City at home, no matter whose form is where. And the brilliant and beautiful thing about this division is anybody can twat anybody else, like by 4 or 5 goals, and it's not surprising either way. And I think he's got to look at it and he's got to say, you know, Bristol City, there's a chance to get the monkey off the back, get that win. And then all of a sudden, all this negativity that's around the club turns into a positive, and we've got Bolton at home on a Tuesday night at Halloween. Let's go bash them as well. And then you've got 6 points, and then we're probably looking upwards as opposed to downwards. We're not in the bottom three. If he just has a little bit of bollocks about himself and just maybe plays McManaman, he plays... And I know we're talking about the clean sheet and stuff like that. Like, at this point, I'm not bothered if we get a clean sheet. I'd like to win 2-0, I would, but I just want to win. And now, if it's 5-4, if it's 7-6, I'm not bothered. Let's just go for it. Let's play on the front foot. Let's play McManaman, Williams if he's fit, McGeady. Let's just go for it. Get this win. Get it out the way. Get that monkey off our back. Go into the Bolton game. Smash them as well. And just go on and win the league. You know, that's what I think we should do.
I don't care if it's 5-4, 7-6, 9-8. It doesn't matter, mate. We'll just bang him in. Christ almighty. I love this kid's optimism, though. Can you imagine if the dressing room had the same amount of optimism as Graham has right now? We'd be fine. All right, well, that's all we've got time for, though, guys. Thanks very much for joining us. Thank you to the audience for listening to us. As ever, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Acast, YouTube. Don't forget to check out www.rokereport.com. And that's all from us for this week. Hopefully we'll be joining you next week with some positive news. I know we say that every week, but there's no harm in trying, is there? So, yeah, for now, that's the Roker Report signing off.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.